Yeah, we're good. It's on.
So the first misconception is that if a mitzvah to be a nida, and if you look at the Torah, it's situational. If it happens, you become a nida. And while we're looking at the verses in the Torah, it's interesting to note that there's actually two women in the Torah who use the mikvah. The woman who has her monthly period, which people call the nida, and in source Chaf Hei, another woman is, we will call her the Zava. It says, Visha ki azov zov zama yamim rabim below et nidata, a woman who sees blood for many days, which we interpret to mean three, for 3 days, not during her nida period, o ki yazov al nidata, or if she sees beyond her 7 day nida period, she becomes a Zava. And this woman, the Torah tells us, not only does she go to the have to wait like to the end of her 7th day, but she also has to wait 7 days. So in Kaf Chet, it says 28. This woman, the Zava, the one who saw not her regular menstrual period, has to wait these 7, we call them clean days. The Shiva Nikiim, the 7 white days, which we practice today. And for all sorts of reasons, people got mixed up of what was the actual monthly period, what would become Razava, so who had to wait only 7 days from the start of the bleeding, and who had to wait 7 additional days. So nowadays, everyone waits the 7 additional days, even during a monthly period, because of this confusion. And that's source, the Gemara there just quotes the build of the Halacha, and it concludes by saying, where's this thing? That Beno Yisrael Ifmaretzman, the English, the daughters of Israel took astringency upon themselves, that even if they saw a drop of blood the size of a mustard seed, they wait 7 clean days. And that's what we do today. Yeah. So the Gemara goes through all sorts of halachic reasons, but confusion reasons. They talk about some more details are that, right, well, there was a little bit of confusion about, you know, knowing, they talk about this idea, there's a period of 7-11, like 7 days of Nida, 11 days of Zava afterwards, and there was confusion about how you count your days of Nida, just because... Among both. So you have both. So one is, just background, because you asked, according to the Torah, we'll talk about the idea that only red blood's a problem. According to the Torah, only 5 specific shades of red are an issue. The Mishnah goes through, like, the if you mix this wine with this exact amount of water, the color you get is a problem. But, like, more water, less water is fine. Right? It goes through very specific colors of red, and we lost that tradition. So that confusion is amongst everyone. The Gemara talks about how the rabbis lost that tradition. And I think once we made all red a problem because of that, it led more confusion about counting your days and thinking, you know, maybe the first 2 or 3 days of your nida were actually okay blood, like okay colored, right? So you think day 7 started on Sunday, or your day 1 started on Sunday. Really, like Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday were the okay colors of red. And it actually started on really Wednesday. So then you don't know, like, are you in your, like, beyond your nida place? Are you still in your nida date? You know, so that was confusing. But I think it's important to point out, the Gemara talks about the confusion. In the Gemara, just the first line, it says, Amar Rav Yosef, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, Hitzkin Rabbi Besazot, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, Meyetekana in the fields. And there Rashi says on it, the field, meaning they were away from the cities, away from Talmidei Chachamim. They were not educated. Now, so I think there's where you get into the confusion came about because they weren't educated. They didn't have people to ask questions to. They were away in the fields, didn't have someone to talk about, is this color Nida or Zava? So I think the confusion came upon both. You know, both because of practical confusion amongst everyone, but also amongst the women who just didn't have the education.
So they were out.
But there could be more questions than colors, right? So they had more
yeah.
questions that come up. So I think because of that, right, so that's what I think is kind of both.
Yeah.
You know, both this loss of everyone, but also women, I think, and I think that's kind of why I believe in education more, you know, further education for women, because I think that, you know, you talk about, you know, B'nai Yisrael, Miratzman, B'nai Yisrael became strict. Because if you don't know something, it's easier to be strict. Because, like, you know, if you ask, like, you know, a young rabbi who just finished smicha a question on kashrus, he's more likely to say it's asur, it's forbidden, because he's scared to, like, say it's okay when it's actually not. It's easier to say no, right? It's easier to restrict. And I think with more education, you can realize what's actually okay, what's actually not okay. That's a good question, though. Okay, so that's the first misconception. Again, it's not a mitzvah, so that means that, you know, they have these, you know, new birth control pills, like the Seasonal, which you could take, get your period 4 times a year, you know, every 3 months. You could, you know, double up packs in a medically permissible way. And that's fine. Like, it's not a halacha to become needed every month. You know, someone asked me a question. She had put an IUD in and hadn't gotten a period for 3 years. She's like, it's okay, like, there's nothing wrong. And I'm like, it's fine, you know, like, you know, there's no mitzvah to become a nidah. If it happens, you go to the mikvah, but you don't have to make yourself become a nidah every month. Okay, so that's number one. Number two, which we'll spend a lot, most of our time on, is this concept, this misconception that all blood makes the woman become a nidah. And that is far from the truth, that there's very specific details of when the sight of blood makes women become nida and when it doesn't. And so here we're going to look at more developments from the Torah. So in the Torah, according to, you know, the biblical law, there's three criteria. So A, it has to be red, as I mentioned. It has to be red or black, because black in the halachic terms is dried red blood. So red or black is a problem. Two, it has to be from your uterus. Okay, so that means if a woman had a gynecological exam and was bleeding from her cervix, she's not needed because of that. That it has to be blood coming from your uterus. And three, is there has to be what's called some sort of physical sensation that accompanies the seeing of blood, which is called hargasha. Like the hargish is to feel. So some sort of feeling she has when the blood comes out. And the you know, Rab Poskim are very specific about what this feeling has to be. So either it has to be that her whole body shakes, which actually a friend of mine told me that that happened to her when she first got her period when she was like 14, that her whole body shook before, like right before she got her period. The second criteria is that you could feel your uterus opening. And the third criteria is that you could feel blood coming from your uterus out. Not from your body out, from your uterus out. So by show of hands, how many of you feel any of those signs when you get to your period?
I've had the moving, like, I was describing it when my husband was learning how to post it, and he's like, oh my God, that's what it is.
Yeah.
But it wasn't when it started. It was, like, in while I already had
okay,
it.
Okay, so it had...
Except you said, like, that doesn't...
Yeah. So if right, is it if you feel right when like no right when the blood's coming out, yeah okay. So you're maybe an exception to the rule. Most of us don't feel that way, right? So from a biblical perspective, like nida doesn't exist anymore, right? Like so you see blood, like so what? There's no hargasha with it. Even if it's red, it's from the uterus. There's no feeling of hargasha. So technically, you're not nida anymore. So we don't quite say that, right? You know, there's all sorts of discussions amongst the rabbis, like, why do we not feel it today? Did our bodies change? Are we feeling it, but we don't notice it, right? Maybe we're less in tune to our bodies, so we are feeling this. And there's a discussion of what's going on. But in general, we say the following. And we say that, okay, if a woman actually has her period, like her monthly period, we're going to assume there was her gesha. So we're going to assume there was this feeling, even though she didn't feel it, and therefore she would become nida on a biblical level during her regular period. Not only her regular period, but any sort of like flow of blood. If it's not just staining, but like a real flow of blood, we're going to say maybe there's a Hikesha there. And this is what the Torah is talking about when it talks about a woman has a flow. So therefore, we're going to say she's that woman is becoming Nida on the biblical level. But if it's not a flow of blood, it's not a regular period, like we call that a stain, right? Just someone sees like a stain. What do you do about that? So here, we're strict and lenient. So basically, the Chachamim said, in this case, a woman sees a stain, we're going to impose a stringency and say she becomes a Nida, but only under certain circumstances. So we're going to build within the stringency leniencies. Is that clear? Right? And I think this is a really important background to understanding the laws, because many women feel, we'll talk about leniencies of staining, many women feel like they're cheating the system if they see like a stain in a way that didn't make them a Nida. Like they feel like, well, I was bleeding, I should become a Nida. But if you understand the background, you realize that on the biblical level, she's totally fine, not Nida at all. The rabbinic level, she becomes Nida, but only when certain criteria are met. Those criteria are not met, there's nothing to talk about in terms of being Nida. Okay, so let's go through some of the leniencies that were built in to this stringency. So the first one is about colors, right? Because we had mentioned before. So if you look at source number one, I'll be quoting mostly from the Shulchan Aruch in Yoredeya, where these halachot are brought down. So it says source number one, Kol mar'e adom, bein im hi kaheh harbei or amok tme'im, v'chein kol mar'e shachor. It's any sort of red, no matter how dark or deep it is, would become make her become Nida, or any black. But that means that colors that are brown could not be a problem, right? So there's a fine line between brown and black, which is, you know, where we get the idea of like asking someone a question about a color, which is probably the most awkward part of keeping Nida if you have colors like this. But it's really important to realize that only red is an issue, right? And I think it's important to know that if you see a color that is brown, it's something that, you know, should be asked about, because most of them are fine. Most browns are fine. And once you ask one or two times or a few times, you don't have to ask anymore. You know, when you learn this color is fine, that color is not fine, then you just don't have to ask anymore. But it's really important to know this. I was just talking, you know, to a woman who was married for 15 years and didn't realize this. You know, she thought that, like, any sort of color would be a problem. And she, you know, it was really difficult for me, you know, to hear someone say that for 15 years of marriage, she was strict on herself whenever she saw colors that were brown when they really weren't problematic. So that's important to know. Okay, so that's the first leniency, that it has to be red or black only. The second one is that, here we'll read it in source 2, Kivan Shuktamim Durabanan. So since this whole idea of staining is rabbinic, it's on the Rabbanan level, Mekilin Bahem Tle B'chol Devar Shechalot Litzlot. We're lenient with them and attribute it to anything we can attribute it to. Okay, so that means the most that could be, you know, you're making strawberry soup and you see a stain on your clothing, your son has a nosebleed, the Gemara talks about, you know, any sort of else going on that you can attribute it to. The most common thing that you would attribute it to would be a wound, like something that you had a wound that was bleeding, and you can say you saw a stain, but it came from that wound, it didn't come from you. From your uterus, which is problematic. And there's a great story in the Mishnah in Nida where it says, Ma'aseh b'isha achat shabas ifnei Rabbi Akiva. So there's one woman who came befriend of Rabbi Akiva. V'amra la ra'iti ketem. She said to him, I saw a stain. V'amra la shema maka haitabich. Is it possible that you had a wound? V'amra lo hein v'chaita. She said, I did, but it already healed. So is it possible that even though it healed, it could open again and bleed? The Amra La Hain, and she said yes, but Tara Rikiva. Rikiva declared her Tahor, not pure, not Anida. The this is the best part of the story. He sees the students looking at each other, like in bewilderment, like what just happened here? The Amra La Hain, Matavaka Shabanicha, why is it so difficult for you? Why are you surprised that I'm being lenient here? Shelo amra chachamim hadvar lehachmir el lakel. The rabbis did not declare this idea of staining to be strict. We're not supposed to be strict about it. Rather, we should be lenient. He says, he quotes the pasuk we read earlier, Bishak hitiyazav adam. If a woman has a flow of blood, has to be of blood and not just a stain. As you're saying here, that he attributed it to a wound, yeah, and we, any sort of other thing we contribute to, we do. Yeah.
Are we talking about only like a logical wound, like an internal wound that could be on your underwear, or it's like the wound on your finger, you're then saying that's where the blood came from?
Right, so let's say most likely it's going to be like a wound inside. A finger could be if you are, let's say you're doing internal examination and you had blood on your finger, no, that could possibly, yeah, what? Right, so we'll talk about that. But like if, or on toilet, you know, like most likely it's not a wound on your face.
Any wound is going to be a wound.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Also, is there a distinction between Sheva Nikiyam stains and
Sheva
Nikiyam stains?
No.
It's all the same.
Yeah.
Meaning we're leaning on all stains.
Yeah, leaning on all stains. This whole idea of staining, again, is a stringency to begin with. Right, because there's no Hagasha there. But if it's a stain, or you know, talk about, I guess the biggest question is what's considered flow, what's considered a stain? Like, what's considered? So we generally say that when you have to go from a panty liner to a pad is when you go from a stain to a flow. So like, if you're like, you know, wear a panty liner, you're not like nervous, like, it's just a little bit, like, you don't want to protect your underwear, but you're not going to have a flow, that's a stain. Whereas if you need to put a tampon in or a pad, you're experiencing more of a flow. So during the 7 clean days, if you're just experiencing staining, that has the same law as a stain other times because that's not considered a flow, right? So even though it was residual from your period, it's not halachically nida because it's just in its category of a stain right now. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
What?
I didn't accept that, like, the end of the period is generally just bad.
Right, but
staining at the end.
Right, but even if it's, even if it had started with your period, if it, right now it's not a flow.
But then are you saying that once the flow stops, that would be considered, like, the end?
Yes,
if
exactly.
If it's been 5 days and you're not flowing, but you're staining, that that's okay.
Exactly, exactly. So the flow is what makes the woman nida. Again, we'll talk about ending the nida period, but that is the criteria. That's what we call like having your period, is the flow itself. The staining at the end, we call staining. We separate the two.
How did you consider that part of Sheva Nikiyam? Like, if it's
because again, biblically, first of all, biblically there's no hargasha, so like
right.
We're good to go. The whole like even the flow is fine, right? So once the flow's gone, you're staining, you shouldn't keen, but that whole concept is astringency to begin with. And the rabbis didn't distinguish between staining after your flow or staining generally. Question back there.
If you stain for a period of time, for a week or for 2 weeks, then what happens? It's all just staining.
Same thing.
So you go to the mikvah.
You don't have to, meaning we'll talk. I want to finish the five. If you were only staining in a way that was halachically did not make you nida, then you do not need to go to the mikvah.
So if you have what's called breakthrough bleeding.
Yeah.
In theory, that's staining.
Right.
And I mean, that's this thing. So then you wouldn't have to wait or count or do anything.
Right. So we'll talk about if you only saw in certain places, certain sizes. Like we'll talk about the leniencies that have to be met. Like, if these five criteria, if at least one of them is met, to be lenient, then you would not have to go to Nikva for just breakthrough bleeding. Yeah, good question. More questions? Yeah.
I think that each time I've taken a refresher course, what I've gotten out of it is kind of, you know, answering to that flow versus staining. It's something that's also, if it's commonplace, and it's something that is every single month, and once you've questioned it once, twice, and you've gotten the leniency that you're fine, then that's your usual and you should go with it, and it doesn't necessarily mean it's still the flow, and it, it could put you into the next stage. And I mean, I think that's like the most valuable thing, is that you have all the resources right there and you have the answers. And once you get that okay, you know your body better than anybody else, and then you're good to go.
Right, like when you know your flow stops, like you're, you know.
Right, and that this, all of the, you really have to be aware of all these colors and all these stages. And once you have it and you've gotten the okay a couple times,
right,
you're clear.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that's the most beneficial thing about this, you know, 15 years into marriage.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, I
you got
finally
it. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's more empowering, you know, once you kind of, you understand it more and you know your colors, it's much more empowering. Yeah. The other question? Yeah. Question?
I just as a response, also, like, if there's also the issue that you're going to be doing internal checks. So, like, if you're having red staining at the end of your period, even if it's still staining, then that's not going to translate into entering into your 17th.
Right. So we'll talk about, right.
Right. So I think, I don't know if that was like part of like what
right.
happened at sea, but like,
right.
well, in, before you enter into the clean days, you anyway have to get a clear vesica. You have to have the hestiara before, you have to have something clear, some kind of proof, like, look, so it has stopped in some way, even if it's brown or something that's not red, to show, like, proof.
Right, that you want to show that your body stops bleeding, but that's why colors come into play, because a lot of people experience brown staining after their flow, right? They have their period for, let's say, 5 days, and then they're staining, but it's brown. Okay, so that would be a time where even if you did these internal examinations, it would be brown, and it's now you're not flowing, so that's fine, right? You can already start counting your 7 clean days, even though
even if the vesica is not perfectly clean,
exactly.
If it's brown,
exactly. I mean, again, these certain most shades of brown are fine. Like a reddish brown would be problematic. And this is why I said you ask in the beginning, you figure out what's okay. But exactly, like once your flow has stopped, if it's just staining and it's not red, then even that vesica would be fine. And I think that's, for a lot of women, that could really, you know, push them to the NICVA a few days earlier each month. Yeah. Because, right, halachically, blood is red. Right, that's how we define blood, halachically. Yeah?
If you're past the 7 clean days, you've been in the mikvah, and you're wearing dark underwear, is there anything that you see on toilet paper that you have to worry about?
No. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about why.
Okay.
Hold that question. Okay. Lots of great questions. So let's get into the next rules, and you'll see why that makes sense. Okay, so I think I'm just going to say something that's outside just for the sake of time, but please look at the handout for your future reference. The next criteria is it has to be a certain size. As we mentioned before, you could like attribute it to anything. So it used to be like there were like lice everywhere. It's kind of gross, but lice. Like not only head lice, but like body lice that was everywhere. So there were like dead bugs on the sheets, on their clothing. It's kind of gross, but they said we can't make a decree against stains because a woman would be in need all the time because there's always like red spots on her clothes from killing lice, and it's kind of gross. So therefore, they built into the halacha that only sizes bigger than the size of a louse is problematic. Right, so only in that that's about the size of a penny. Okay, so the lice were huge, I guess.
Yeah,
they're big and they're everywhere. Right, so think how we live in our society today. So if even if a stain is red, if it's smaller than a penny, then it wouldn't make a woman need it. Okay, so that's the size issue. Second of all, it has to be, and also like if you have two stains on a clothing, they're separate, because they could be two different lice. So those are separate stains on your clothing. Okay. So the third criteria is it has to be on a white garment. Right? We mentioned before that it has to be red. And if you see a stain on a yellow garment, you can't really tell the color of the stain, right? You can't tell exactly what color it is. And we're lenient when it comes to stains, so we're going to assume it wasn't red. So only stains you see on white fabric is an issue. So that's what I said about colored, you know, underwear. We typically say, the Gemara, you know, says here, somewhere here, the Shulchan Aruch writes, here, page number 3, at the top, he says, Lefichach, the second line, Lefichach tilbash yisha bigdei tzivonim. A woman should therefore wear colored clothes. Like saying that, like, have colored underwear. Rav Willig, I think from IU, says you cannot own white sheets in your house. It's like Jewish couples should not own white sheets. Have everything colored. Only during the 7 clean days will wear white underwear. But in general, if you see anything colored on your, you know, tights, your underwear, your pant, your skirt, it would not be an issue. The last criteria is that it has to be on something that can, it's called makabel tuma, can contract virtual purity, can contract tuma. And that means that if you see a stain on something that cannot become ritually impure, then the woman does not become nida. So that, what does that mean? Okay, so things that can become makabel tuma are like natural things, like wood or things made, like cotton, things made from natural ingredients, can become tame. So that means a stain on cloth underwear would become, is makabel tuma, but a stain on something is synthetic, like plastic, on a plastic toilet seat, would not be a problem. Or another category of makabel tuma is if it's connected to the ground. So even a toilet seat cannot become tuma, and also, or tame, and also the water inside the toilet bowl is connected to the toilet bowl, it's connected to the ground. So if you see blood in the toilet bowl, it does not make you nida, because that water cannot contract tuma. It also can mean things like toilet paper, you mentioned, right? We talk about toilet paper as something like synthetic. It's not synthetic in that way, but it's disposable. It's not like a garment that you're going to keep. So on toilet paper, it's not a problem. Similarly, on pads, panty liners, blood on a panty liner or a pad is not an issue. Again, we spoke about flow versus staining. So if you have a flow on a pad, you're in the category of the hargasha, you're no longer in the category of staining. But if you're in the category of staining, where it's not a flow, you see blood on a panty liner, even if it's red, even if it's bigger than the size of a penny, it's not a problem. Okay, so if, as long as one of these criteria are met, it's not needed. You don't need all of them. So either it's not red or black. Either it's not there's something else to attribute it to, or it's smaller than a penny, or it's on something colored, or it's on something that's not a kabbal tuma, then that stain does not make you become tame. Even if it's during your Shiva Nikim, right? If you see a stain during your 7 clean days on white underwear that's smaller than a penny, or, you know, that wouldn't be a problem. Any question? I mean, what would, like, a toilet paper?
It was toilet paper, right. So, like,
so toilet paper is not a problem, because by itself is...
But since he said that, so I'm wondering, is that really... is everyone that lenient about these things? Like,
wasn't there, like, waiting... You have to wait, like, 30 seconds.
Yeah, so there is... We'll talk about... Well, there is this idea that there are three activities that can somewhat mask this hargasha. Like, activity that has to do with your pelvic region that might mask this hargasha. So one of them is an internal examination, like a bedika that one does. Since it's internal, like, you might not feel your body having this hargasha. So therefore, anything that's internal, like, any would not, you cannot apply the laws of staining to. So that means, like, if you see a drop of blood in a tampon, that's a tiny bit, but it was internal, that would become nida, because you can't apply the rules of the leniency of staining to anything internal. That's what, even like in a bedika cloth, like, from a little bit is a problem, even though it's smaller than a penny, because it was internal. Similarly, we talk about after relations. You know, there was, you could have had aggression, not felt it. So if you see blood, like, right afterwards, that would be an issue. And in terms of, some say, also go into the bathroom, right? After urinating, you might feel hagusha, you might see hagusha and not feel it, so you should wait between, wait a few seconds before wiping yourself. I think in Israel, like, there's an interesting difference of opinion of whether we paskin that way. In Israel, we're more strict about it, in America, we're less strict about it. So I think in America, even if you don't wait, we're less strict about it, but that is definitely something that people recommend, like waiting a few seconds beforehand. Okay, so again, I think it's important to, you know, realize that it's not cheating the system, it's part of the system. You know, and I think in a lot of ways, it feels wrong, like it feels like I saw blood, but if it didn't fit these criteria, then it doesn't become a nidah. And going back to the colors I forgot to mention, one important point, because you reminded me of it, of, like, if you didn't see it, you know, there's a principle that it's in the Dayan, Ela Mash and Avro'ot, so a judge only has what he sees in front of him, what his eyes see. So that means, like, if you see a color on, you know, Badika cloth, your underwear, and you're like, I'm not sure, is this brown, is it red, I'm not sure about it, it's at night, you want to look at colors in daylight, because incandescent light bulbs highlight the reds and things, and actually makes a big difference in terms of looking at colors. So you don't want to look at it in your incandescent light bulbs. So if it's at night and you're like, I'm not sure, wait till the morning, look at it through your window. You have to go outside your house, look at it through your window. And if it looks totally fine to you, it's fine. You don't need to say, but maybe if I looked at it last night, it would have been different. You know, like, if you're looking at it in the moment, that's what you care about. So similarly, if you, like, you know, go to a rabbi, but I think it changed colors, and like he's not going to think about that. He's going to say, what color is it right now? You can't, like, wait for it to turn, like, brown, and when it was bright red to begin with. But I'm saying, if there's an actual safek, like an actual doubt, you're allowed to wait and don't contradict yourself. You know, think, there's a story in the Gemara about a rabbi who did that, and they all, like, criticize him for second-guessing himself, because he should just go by what you have in front of you. Okay, so that is the... Oh, we're running short of time. Okay, any questions so far? More questions? Okay, so quickly skip down to number three. If you are in doubt of your status, do badika, declare yourself nidah. So here again, we do not, since we're more strict with internal examinations than regular staining, we don't encourage any extra badika than you have to do. Someone once told me she learns in her Kala classes that if she sees a stain that's not problematic, she should do a badika just to see what's going on. We definitely do not recommend that. We definitely do not want to do any sort of internal examination if it's not during your 7 clean days or your veset. Okay. A few minutes. Okay. We'll do this quickly. Okay. Number four. The postpartum period is difficult no matter what. So a lot of women think, you know, feel like no matter what I do, like, I'm going to be needed for, like, months after I give birth. And I think, hopefully, through understanding a lot of the staining more, you realize that there are more leniencies. Like, once you stop flowing, even if you're still staining a little bit, there are leniencies you could take, you know, in terms of already starting to go to the mikvah. You know, my friend, I know she has 3 daughters. The first one she went after 6 weeks, the second one after 5 weeks, the third one after a month, coming after giving birth. You know, because you realize more and more through her studying, you know, that she can go, what was actually a problem, what wasn't a problem, you know, in terms of staining-wise. It's also important, and here we'll go through some sources, that, you know, the Tahara process in general entails doing this Hefsek Tahara, which is this Badika internal examination to kind of show that you're clean, you stopped bleeding, followed by this minhag, I say a strong minhag, is what's called like a moch, which is like an extra, like super duper hefsek, which is like leaving it in for a little bit, like a little, like people would put in a small tampon or a badika cloth, you leave it in for a 20 minute period to make sure you stop bleeding. And then we start counting the Shibud HaKim as long as we had at least 5 days from when we started, I mean, as long as your hefsek was then within 5 days after. You started bleeding. But I think it's important to know that there are some cases where we can become more lenient about these. And the postpartum period is one case where we don't tell women to do this moch, this extra, this longer hefsek. You know, we don't encourage, it's kind of the first thing to go when a woman's having difficulty getting through the Shivan Anakim. It's like, it's not in the Gemara. It's like, it's a minhag of the Rashba. It doesn't have the same weight as the regular hefsek or bidikot. So it's the first thing to go when your issues arise. And you can just see, and I quoted it for you under C, where it talks about it's a minhag. Okay, then we get down to the number of bidikot we have to do. There's a whole story in the Gemara and part D about how many bidikot you have to do. Day one, day seven. And just to, you know, wrap things up quickly, we'll read the Shulchan Aruch inside. That's the bottom of the page 4. I'll just read it in English to save time. So on every day of the 7-day count, she has to check l'chachila twice a day, once in the morning and once close to Bein HaShemashot, like once before Shkia. Rav Willig at YU says l'chachila once a day, because we found a lot of women were very rushed in the afternoon trying to do it again. It would actually hurt themselves because they were like not, didn't have enough time. He tells the woman to do it once in the morning and forget about it. Just do it once in the morning. And it says, if she only checked one time throughout the entire 7 days, whether she checked on day one or on day seven or in the middle days, as long as she checked on the day before the 7-day count, meaning as long as she did the hefsek and it was tahor, it counts for her. So I mean, like, even if you just did like one check on day 3, the Shulchan Aruch is saying that would be enough. That would be sufficient. But he goes on and says, but if she didn't check at all during 7 days, and she checked on day 8 and it was tahor, she only has the 8. Meaning, if you didn't check at all during that day period, it doesn't count. And then he says, there are those who say that she has to check on day 1 and on day 7 and do not be lenient. Okay, so after saying day 3 would be fine, he goes on to say, actually, you know what? We're going to be strict about day 1 and day 7. So generally, we tell people to do bidika every single day, twice a day or once a day. But it's important to know that if when things come up, if a woman's staining, like chronically staining, and like she was able to get the hefsek, right, able to get day 1, there might be cases where we say, okay, don't check again until day 7. Like, even if you're staining in the middle, we might tell her in this case, you know, again, like the wearing white underwear is also a minhag. So if a woman is staining, she could wear colored underwear, you know, that way, or she could wear panty liners. You know, we can do all sorts of things to make sure she can get, you know, through the 7-day period. After giving birth, this would be something to discuss with the rabbi about, you know, how many bidikot should be doing, or with the yoatzet, how many bidikot should you be doing based on your staining. If you're still staining a little bit, it's possible you could still, you know, if you can want to day 1 and day 7, you can be fine even if there's some staining in the middle. Not just for postpartum, but other situations. If you're on certain hormonal birth control pills or the IUD, whatever's going on. No, again, this wasn't a normal case. No, people weren't staining randomly. But nowadays, based on different pills and stuff we're on, you could have periods of long staining. And, you know, what do you do about that? So we typically say, you know, these are cases where we should discuss about, you know, ways to be more lenient, because it's built into the halacha. It's built in what's really important, what's second, you know, and third, and so forth. So we should be just aware of the different stages of what to do. It's important to know, I should have mentioned this earlier, though, you know, even when you see a stain that is permissible, like it's not the right color or the right shape, this is not, I say, pure halacha, but we typically advise to refrain from relations for 24 hours until it stops. So meaning, like, even if the blood is, you know, less than a penny, like, you don't want to be in a situation where you were with your husband and you realize, actually, it turned into a flow, and now I'm Anita, right? So as long as it's, so, like, if you saw a few days of staining, we typically say, like, you're not Anita yet. You don't have to keep all laws of Nida, but refrain from relation just until the staining stops. In cases where women are staining long periods, like you mentioned, you know, there could be, let's say you're like getting used to a new birth control pill, or you got your IUD put in, you can have 6 months of staining. There could be even more leniencies of this is where it gets to, like, don't look. You know, kind of thing, like if you think it might turn into a period, we're more strict about waiting. If you know, like, I'm going to have just staining for a month, you know, this is like typical on this birth control pill. It's just the thing, it's not going to turn into a period. I know it won't. I haven't taken, you know, the placebo yet. Like, I know it won't leave you staining. We could be more lenient about, this is where you get into, you know, don't look at it. When you go to the bathroom, don't see it. Wear a black panty liner and don't look. You know, they sell them at nikva.org, black panty liners. You know, so like this. Is someone here too? Okay. So this is where you would get into, like, you know, I would say, like, more not long-term situations, but short-term situations where you might be even more lenient when it comes to even being intimate with your husband while you're still staining, if it's going to be a prolonged time period. And that's something you want to, again, discuss with your tzaddik or rabbi about when you can, you know, what to do in those situations. But it's important to know that leniencies do exist. And I wanted to get into the concept of chatzitza. I don't have time. Feel free to read the source sheets about it. Or, you know, please feel free to email me if you're curious about what I was going to say, or talk to me afterwards during the break. And the last thing I'll end off with, because we're running out of time, is the last misconception that there's no one to ask questions to. And it's not worth asking a question. I think that, you know, my friend Zuyesa told me that she tells people, you know, ask a question, except when you're 100% positive that you're nida, and even then sometimes, right? Because sometimes there's more leniencies there than they're aware of. You should know that. Now, I'm sure the rabbis here in the community are very happy to speak to you, or they can go through their reverences. I'd also be very happy to be a resource for you in the future. And you should know that, you know, I think hopefully through more education and learning more, you, as you mentioned, you'll eventually get to the point where you kind of know what to do. You know the drill. But even then, some things come up. It's important to know that there are resources out there, and there's more, I would say, leniencies or special circumstances. And that arise, a halacha does have room for, to be aware of. So with that, I'll stop it, but please